This is Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tonight's subject, the most visible minority, your policeman. Tonight's guest, John Harrington, president of the National Fraternal Order of Police. You speak for yourself and ask your questions directly by calling Collect Night Call's national phone number, area code 212-749-3311, or in the New York area, 866-5010. Night Call's host in New York City is Del Shields.
Good evening. My apologies for my absence on Friday night and my thanks to my assistant Anna Kassoff for filling in so well without any warning. As you know, I was in Miami for my convention of the National Association of Television and Radio Announcers, and I was scheduled in plenty of time, but just didn't make it in. There has been an awful lot of talk with some considerable justification about police brutality, especially as regards treatment of minority groups. The President's Commission on Civil Disorders, the Kerner Commission, says in the summary of its report, "To some blacks, the police have come to symbolize white power, white racism, and white repression. And the fact is that many police do reflect and express these white attitudes. The atmosphere of hostility and cynicism is reinforced by a widespread belief among blacks in the existence of police brutality and in a double standard of justice and protection, one for blacks and one for whites." That's a quote from the Kerner Report about police brutality in the black minority. I don't think that at this point in our history, anyone can logically argue that there have not been instances of police brutality practiced on the black man and woman. The only rational argument would be the extent of it and what's being done to end it. But consider for the moment the other side of this particular coin. Instances of black brutality practiced on your policeman, who because of the color of his uniform, surely must qualify as the most visible minority in the country. In the past few months alone, there have been many examples of police being harassed, beaten, shot, and sometimes killed by black men. Cleveland, where three white police officers were murdered less than a month ago, is certainly the most horrifying instance I can think of. A lot of people and a lot of law enforcement officers blame such incidents on what they call generally a lack of community support in dealing with racial violence. Specifically, they cite recent Supreme Court rulings which they say tie their hands. Government officials and other influential citizens who believe the Kerner Report to be correct and are following its guidelines, and the very quiet, unofficial word from the White House that looters are not to be shot. Our guest tonight is John Harrington, national president of the 137,000-member Fraternal Order of Police. The organization has important lodges in many large cities, including Philadelphia, Detroit, Chicago, and Denver, and in some 38 states. The FOP, or Fraternal Order of Police, gets important additional support from its 90,000 businessmen associate members. Less than a week after the Cleveland disturbance, in which three policemen were killed, Mr. Harrington called for a conference to consider a two-day nationwide police walkout to protest the lack of support in dealing with racial violence. Mr. Harrington said at the time, and we quote, "When police are being shot like fish in a barrel, it's time we do something," unquote. Mr. Harrington is standing by in St. Louis to answer your questions and share your comments and conversation on your policeman, the most visible minority. You may speak to him direct at our national number, area code 212-749-3311. And of course, you're always welcome to call Collect. That's national calls on area code 212-749-3311. In the New York area, you may call us at 866-5010. That's local calls, please, only on 866-5010. Mr. Harrington, good evening, sir.
How are you?
And thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure.
Mr. Harrington, we understand you were in St. Louis attending your national board meeting, at which a decision was to be made today as to whether or not you would call for a nationwide two-day walkout of policemen. Has the decision been taken, and what is it?
Well, let me correct the first part of that statement. This national board meeting is an annual affair of our organization, and we called it in St. Louis, and at this board meeting, we were going to discuss the grievances of many men who advocate that this is what we should do. Our organization is opposed to any slow up in police work, and our organization is also opposed to police strikes. we did say, and I was misquoted in many papers, I said that this feeling is amongst the members of the police departments that perhaps we should take a two-day holiday and let the people find out what this country would be like if there was no policemen. And I do believe that the men should be heard. And what I said was that I was going to call a seminar to listen to their grievances, and I was going to air these grievances, and perhaps we could come to a solution to this drastic action. Now, at our board meeting here in St. Louis, after listening to the complaints of many policemen who represent various departments throughout the country, we also heard that from some that they are being supported in their locality, but this was very, very few. And it was decided after much debate and after listening to many, many people speak, it was decided that as police officers, our first obligation is to the decent people in the community, decent people in the country, and that we would be shirking our duty if we did go out on a two-day walkout. And we convinced all of these members of these various police departments that this would be the wrong thing to do, that we suggested to them things that they should do. We suggested that they should go to fraternal organizations and parents, teachers, organizations, any civic organization, that it's possible to speak to the members and to bring the conditions to the community and also bring it to the news media so that these things can be brought to the public and these things can be corrected in the locations where they're taking place. And that's what our final decision was.
Well, now, the American Federation of Police, which is another organization representing law enforcement officers, they stated earlier that they, too, were opposed to a walkout by the police. Now, are they in agreement with this?
Well, American, I've been a policeman for 26 years, and also I've been on a leave of absence for the past 2 years. I never heard of the Federation of Police. The Federation of Police is more or less an insurance group that's willing to take out a group insurance on police. And in many, many cities, they are soliciting advertisement for their magazines, and they use the name FOP. People, business people who think that they are giving to the Fraternal Order of Police are giving to FOP, Federation of Police. And I think that they only use the similarity to let the people think that they're giving to a real police organization. Now, to join the Fraternal Order of Police, you have to be a full-time police officer of a municipality, a state, or the federal government, and your main source of livelihood must come from police work to join our organization. I never heard of this other organization other than insurance benefits. You pay so much and you get an insurance policy, and no policeman that I know of knows anything about them.
Well, am I right in the statement, or interpreting the statement correctly, that the American Federation of Police are masquerading as a legal representative of policemen throughout the country?
Yes, I would say that you're perfectly right, and that for this reason. I am also the president of the Philadelphia Fraternal Order of Police, which includes every policeman in the Philadelphia Police Department, yet the Federation of Police comes into the city of Philadelphia and solicits advertisement from the business people in our community, and they solicit it under the name of FOP. The businessman thinks he's given this advertisement to the Fraternal Order of Police. We haven't got one policeman in the Philadelphia Police Department who belongs to the Federation of Police. So they're certainly full of them in our city.
I'm just curious as to whether or not you plan to take any action against the American Federation of Police.
Well, I tried to do it. And they're just one step within the law. And I have went to the district attorney, all inspector in Philadelphia. At the present time, there's an investigation going on in Florida. There's many police departments investigating them, and I do expect them to take that one step outside the law, and I think that they'll be in trouble.
I would like to quote a statement that they've made, if I may.
Yes.
In reference to the planned walkout, and we quote, "To consider a walkout as a protest is to join the very same level that the group we object to are on. It is the move of rabble-rousers and could lead only to further decay of the public attitude toward police officers. Although it may be to a few a popular idea, it is un-American," unquote.
Yes, well, just like I said, I don't know any policemen that they represent, so I don't have too much faith in the Federation of Police. I never heard of them until just this last year and a half or so when they start getting ads. And I'd like them to say what they're using this money, this ad money, for. We have caught many phony organizations in our city collecting ads for the police widows and police orphans, and they've collected as high as $250,000 in the city of Philadelphia. Of course, they were just one step inside the law, the same as this outfit. But we thought that perhaps maybe the Internal Revenue should question these people, and we turned the whole thing over to Internal Revenue. And I feel pretty sure they'll have to account for where their funds go. We account where ours go.
Mr. Harrington, we have calls already standing by from Flint, Michigan, as well as New York and other points throughout the country, and we want to go to our listeners at this point. We'll be coming back to you because I think we will embark on a rather interesting conversation, you being from Philadelphia, and which is my hometown, and of course I think our paths may have crossed at some time under the banner of former New York or former police commissioner in Philadelphia, Mr. Howard Leary, so we'll be talking to you about that.
Okay.
Right now, let's go to Flint, Michigan, where Mrs. Churchill is hearing Night Call over WMEN. Mrs. Churchill?
Yes.
Good evening. Your question, please.
This concerns police brutality.
Yes, that's our subject tonight.
Yes, ma'am.
One of the things I think that would eliminate police brutality if the corruption within the police departments was eliminated.
Well, what do you mean by corruption within the police department?
When I was a policewoman in a certain city, I was from a small town, and when I became a policeman in a much larger town, they would go out and pick up some whiskey that wasn't supposed to, people that were selling whiskey not supposed to be, and they would bring it in to police headquarters. And then they would come up to the police ladies, the police women's quarters. They would drink this whiskey and gamble and have a very good time. And I was pretty shocked by this because my idea of a policeman was a little bit above that.
Well, you were a policewoman in that police department, were you not?
Yes, I was.
What did you do about this? You were a policeman, and you have the duty and the responsibility of arresting anybody who violates the law. Why didn't you arrest these people?
Let me tell you something. I was just not too old and from a small town, and I was just breaking in. I didn't know anything about policemen, really, and the way they were to act.
Well, you know these things that these policemen were doing were wrong.
It certainly was wrong.
All right. Now, you as a policeman had a duty. Why didn't you perform your duty?
Because at that time, I was only 19 years old.
You were 19 years old and you were a policeman?
That's right.
I don't believe that because in most all the states...
True.
Now, most all of the states, you had to be 21 to carry a gun, and you can't be a policeman unless you carry a gun. That
I wasn't carrying a gun. I never had a gun, but I went with my mother-in-law, and she was supposed to be the policewoman, and she didn't. She wasn't able to take women that were drunk. And
are you telling me your mother-in-law was the policewoman, and you were 19, and you went with her?
Yes, I did. Because she was
afraid.
Well,
that don't sound right to me. You were not a policewoman at 19.
Yes, I was. Because
if you were helping her.
After she left, then I took over the job for a while.
Mrs. Churchill, are you at liberty to state where this took place or what state?
Yes, I'm perfectly willing to state the place. It was Lansing, Michigan.
In Lansing, Michigan,
that's
you
right.
Helped your stepmother, was it?
My mother-in-law.
You helped your mother-in-law. At 19, you were helping your mother-in-law who was the policewoman.
Yes.
How long ago was this?
That was, well, about, shall I tell you my exact age?
Sure.
Okay.
Well, keep the age. Just tell us how long ago it was.
I'm 66 right now.
You're 66?
You're 66?
Yes,
and this,
ma'am.
And this happened when you were 19?
Yes.
That would be 47 years ago?
Yes.
Well, that was just before, I would assume, Mr. Harrington, before civil service came about, and probably that was...
Well, let me say this. This was almost at the start of police work in the state of Michigan because... You know, there was never a policeman in the history of the world until 1829. And the first man who invented policemen was Sir Robert Peel in England. That was 1829, and that's why they call the English policemen Bobbies, and that's why sometimes they call them Peelies. So we're going to go back 47 years ago. We're almost going back to the creation of the first police department in the state of Michigan.
Well, that may be
Harrington,
so, but nevertheless, it did happen.
Mrs. Churchill has raised a most significant question, though, and I would like to see if we can get an answer to it, but I've got to break
go
now
ahead.
For station identification. But my question is this. She stated that possibly that corruption by police departments or by men in the police department might have added to police brutality. Now, whether it happened 45 years ago or 10 years ago, is there any kind of relationship to police corruption and police brutality?
Well, I asked her about the corruption part. Explain it, and she tells me about confiscated liquor being drank in the ladies' quarters 47 years ago. How did this come about to be any connection with police brutality?
Well, I think if a policeman drinks the whiskey that he has confiscated, that he would be as bad as a drunken man on the street.
Well, is this brutality?
Some men get brutal when they're drunk.
Yeah, but I say, is the policeman drinking confiscated whiskey brutality?
No, but how did they act when they left there? And they gambled, and they arrested men for gambling, and they were doing the same thing themselves.
Did you see this?
Mrs. Churchill and Mr. Harrington, I ask you to hold it for us. Mrs. Churchill, thank you so much for calling. We'll try to get an answer from Mr. Harrington.
Okay.
Thank you so much. We'll return to Mr. Harrington right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest John Harrington after station identification. Black is a red-blooded American color. The black showed the color of his blood in places like Vietnam and Korea and every other all-American battleground since the Revolution. Every time his country calls for help, he hears. But we don't seem to hear him when he calls. If black and white would listen with their hearts, they could hear each other. That's what Night Call is all about. It lets people air their views man to man, color to color, live from phones anywhere in the country. A syringe full of junk bites into black and white skin with the same ruining surge, and a black mother cries over her child just like a white one does. The problems are the same. The characters just have different colors. Night Call's person-to-person nationwide radio hookup lets the black and the white tell it like it is. Speak for yourself. Collect on Night Call. Area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to John Harrington about your policeman. Again, Del Shields.
And we return to our guest, Mr. Harrington, who is calling in from St. Louis tonight, and we're talking about the visible minority, which is the policemen throughout America. And just prior to our station identification, we were talking with Mrs. Churchill. And Mr. Harrington?
Yes, I'm on.
The question of police corruption and brutality, I don't know if we actually were able to get the complete question from Mrs. Churchill, but is there a relationship with police corruption and police brutality?
No, I think that the example that Mrs. Churchill has just stated that happened 47 years ago, I think is a far-fetched dream of what actually police brutality is meant. I think it's a far-fetched dream of police work in general, because here's a girl, 19 years of age, helping her mother-in-law be a policewoman. Here's a girl who then, she said later on, she took over the duties of police work. Now, she was a poor policeman for this reason. Every policeman is sworn to apprehend any person who violates the law. So a good policeman, if these violations were taking place in front of her, and she must have been present when they're taking place, and she must have stayed to see these things take place, or else how would she know? So what did she do about it? Nothing. She was a poor policewoman, and I think it was a poor police department where they had young girls helping their mother-in-laws to enforce the law. These conditions were pioneer police departments.
Well, let's talk about the conditions of today. Now, many of the policemen throughout the nation are complaining that they have been told that there is a hands-off attitude in terms of looters and in terms of many of the demonstrators. And this has made many of the policemen unhappy.
Well, positively, this is taking place today in New York. New York police are told to walk on a cloud. In Philadelphia, we were told, let them tire themselves out burning and destroying. Then when they tire themselves out, they'll stop. This is a poor attitude. This is surrender.
This is surrender to what, sir?
I say it's surrender.
But surrender...
To let people tire themselves out destroying other people's property. This is not the way that any police department is expected to work.
Do you feel that the leniency being practiced by policemen throughout the country is bad at this point?
I think in cases such as that, to let a person who is looting and burning, let him tire himself out looting and burning, I think a policeman to do that is shirking his duty, because a policeman, when he is sworn in, he's sworn in to protect life and to protect property.
In what order, sir?
Let a person destroy property and be doing police work in a proper manner.
Well, in what order? If you say that the policeman's, if he is sworn to uphold life and property, is there priority? Is he to preserve life first and then property?
No, there is no priority in anything. When a policeman is sworn in, he takes an oath, a solemn oath, that he will protect the life and the property of the people of that community, that he will enforce all the laws. He will enforce the state law, the federal law, and city ordinances, and also take action where summary offenses take place. Now, none of these things are given priority. You're expected to do any and all of them, anytime that they're committed within your sight. So for anybody to say, let them tire themselves out burning and looting, they're saying to you, shirk your duty. Disobey the oath that you took. Now, nobody has that right to say that, because the law is very clear. The law is for me, the law is for you, and the law is for everybody in America. If they don't like the law, then there's a way of doing things. That is to get your legislator and change the law.
Well, hasn't it been stated and it's been proven in many areas throughout the country that there is one law that is applicable to the rich man and one that is applicable to the poor man?
No, the man who invented law was Cicero, and Cicero said the greatest law of all is the protection of the people. Now, he invented law many, many years ago before you and I and Mrs. Churchill, and he said the greatest law of all is the protection of the people.
Well, is this being carried out?
Yes, I think it is, as best as possible under the conditions that policemen have to work under today.
Now, we have heard many reports about police brutality. Just before we take some of our calls from Washington and New York, as people are standing by, as a policeman, you've been on the force, an active policeman, over 20 years.
26 years,
and you have performed most of your work in Philadelphia.
That's right.
Now, as we look at the entire police departments across the nation, what problems do the policemen face today?
The greatest problem that policemen face today is the lack of support of the communities and poor wages, poor pension conditions. These are the worst problems that a policeman faces today.
Now, this has nothing at all to do with a black-white issue.
Now, crime don't come in color. Crime is committed by criminals. Criminals come in all color. There's no colored crime. There's no yellow crime. There's no brown, no white, no green. Crime is committed by one kind of a person, a criminal person. Those who don't break the law, the decent people, they don't come in colors either. There's decent people in all races, all colors, all religions. It's just the hoodlum and the person who don't want to work for a living, and the person who wants to take what he wants when he wants it from those who are working every day to obtain happiness and what they want to provide for their families.
Well, my final question, sir, just before we go to, not my final, but my this will be my last question in this segment. What is your feeling about the intense hatred, and I'm just using this very very broadly, but the hatred that's being projected and being presented in the black communities against the policemen? What are the reasons for this?
Well, I think that the hatred is being spread in black communities against policemen I think it's spread by people who want to destroy police power. This is a great country. This country could never be defeated from the outside. Anybody that wants to defeat this country has to defeat it from the inside. And the way to defeat any country from the inside, Hitler proved it, Mussolini proved it, is the first thing you have to destroy is law and order and destroy police power. Now, once you destroy these things, who's going to stop you? And I think that it's people who advocate the overthrow of this government, the overthrow of this great country, they are the ones that's advocating this hatred.
Mr. Harrington, we'll go to Washington, D.C. Mr. Mendelson is standing by, and he's hearing Night Call over WAMU. Mr. Mendelson, good evening, sir.
Good evening, Dell.
How are you?
Fine, you?
Fine, thank you.
Good. Good evening, Mr. Harrington.
How are you?
Fine. Mr. Harrington, do you believe in shooting looters? I'm going to put that... that question was probably asked before, but I'm going to ask you directly. Do you
believe that looters should be shot.
What if these looters turn out to be children?
The parents would be the responsible person in that case. The parents, if a person is committing a man-sized crime, now, do you mean babies, or do you mean, children in my state grow to be 21, they're still infants. Now, what do you mean the age limit of a looter when you say a child?
No, I don't mean 21. I mean within the teenagers, even below the teenage point. Let's say from maybe,
17, 18?
No, further below that age.
13?
Mm-hmm.
No, I think if a person 13, I think if it's possible to get that type of a person, I think that person should be apprehended. But I think that the people who are doing wide-scale looting, I think they, adults and people who, for example, as Governor Hughes seen in Newark, drive up in a Cadillac, walk in and fill it up with shoes and dresses, that person, I think, should be shot. I wouldn't have no objections to it, because the policeman certainly can't handle a situation like that, because if the police department follows the Supreme Court decisions, you, first of all, have to spend about 2 or 3 minutes reading a card to a person. You have to make them comfortable,
mm-hmm.
and you have to say to them, now, don't tell me nothing, because you're going to tell me it, I'm going to use it against you. And I would advise you to get a lawyer, and if you don't have the money to get a lawyer, why, we will provide you a lawyer at no cost, and I would advise you to get a lawyer, because he could give you a legal alibi whereby we couldn't put you in jail. Now, by the time you're saying all these things to a thief, why, the other thieves are burning the country down.
Really?
So I think that the decisions of the Supreme Court have tied the policemen's hands that they cannot cope with these riotous conditions that's taking place.
Mr.
Harrington, some other means has to be made.
Mr. Harrington, to your knowledge, have policemen ever shared in any of the looting?
To my knowledge, no, I never seen one. If I seen one, I'd put them in jail.
The reason I ask this is I heard of an incident here in Washington during the rioting they had here, where this teacher came out of a school, and she was coming down to the gate, and she saw some of her students running up the street, arms full of loot. And I believe these were really youngsters. And they stopped in front of the gate when they saw her, and one of them called out, Mrs. So-and-so, would you like something from the store down the street? We just looted it. And she was just shocked.
Well, do you think that these conditions should take place in this country of ours today?
No, I don't.
That a businessman who spends his life building up a small business, who starts from nothing, who works long hours, and puts everything he has into a small business, that any group should have the right to burn his place down, go out in and take anything out and wipe him entirely out of business. Do you think this is fair for that man? Don't you think he's got rights?
I agree. But what if the parent turns out to be just as worse as the youngster?
Well, that's what the trouble is today. None of these conditions would take place if the parents did their job. If the parents, all this stuff starts in the home. There's too many children born out of wedlock today that the parents don't care what happens to them. And this is the trouble. I think if all these things, religion, I think, was in the home, I think you'd have a lot less of these conditions in this country today. But I blame the parents, and I blame the churches. If the parents would send them to church, and if the churches would enforce religion on these people. I don't say ram religion down your throat, but I think that the parents, if the parents would teach them the decent way of life, I think if the parents would bring religion into their life, I think if the parents would spend more time with their children and less time in tap rooms, I think that this would be a better life.
What if the parents can't?
What do you mean they can't?
Just that. What if they can't?
You mean what if a parent can't spend the time with his children and has to spend it in the tap room?
Beg pardon?
My last remarks to you were that a lot of this trouble is because the parents are not spending time with their children. They're spending the time in the tap room now. You say, what
Mr.
if the Mendelsohn, parents can't?
Mr.
Do you mean if they can't stay out of the tap room?
Mr. Harrington, Mr. Mendelsohn, we'll have to break for station identification. We'll be coming right back. Mr. Mendelsohn, thank you so much for calling.
Okay.
Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest John Harrington after station identification. America is growing smaller. Speed of communication, speed of travel, and the worldwide revolution in human rights. These things bind us together into a common destiny. One man's problem is every man's problem. More and more we realize the only real problem is the human problem. People who need jobs, better education, better places to live, better medical care, and better hope for the future. A chance to become part of the American dream of freedom and opportunity. But for the American dream to succeed, each of us must be responsive to the needs of others. To give a damn about our brother or our sister, black or white. You'll find some answers to how you can help give a damn, how you can offer your help, in a new booklet called Whose Crisis? Yours. You can get a copy without charge by writing to Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, P-O-M-O-N-A, New York. Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call. Area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to John Harrington about your policeman. Again, Del Shields.
And a welcome, of course, to the many Night Call stations who always join us for the second half hour. Tonight we are discussing your policeman, the most visible minority. Now, guest calling in from St. Louis, Mr. John Harrington, who is president of the National Fraternal Order of Police. We'll go to Bellingham, Washington, to Mr. McGee, who is standing by and hearing Night Call over KERI-FM. Mr. McGee?
Yes, sir.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Your question, sir.
Mr. Harrington?
Yes, Mr. McGee.
How does it happen that you don't arrest most of these people that are stealing and so on?
Well, just as one of the former callers there brought out the question, the thing that's taking place in New York today, the big fight between the policeman and the police department is the department says to them, don't take no action. And the policemen are perturbed about this. Policemen want to take the proper action, what they're paid to do, what their sworn duty is to do.
Right.
And in a lot of police departments, they don't want you to take the action.
Right.
And in a lot of courts, if you do take the action, why, you're the one that's chastised for locking them up.
We should have a lot of change in our courts, shouldn't we?
Well, this is one of the things that we policemen say that we're not being supported in.
You take any
serious crime that's committed in this country and look at the record, you'll find that the fellow was locked up 15 or 20 times. Now, this proves one thing. This proves that the police are doing their duty by locking these people up.
Right.
But somebody, the court, the probation system, or the parole system, is not supporting this because they're the people letting them out. Now, I know in Philadelphia, three men went in to rob a bank, and we policemen had to stand there and shoot it out with them. Of course, the three of them were killed. These three men had 500 years of prison time, parole. Now, why does a man get out on the street to commit serious crimes? Here's a man, three men got 500 years of prison time. They've been locked up a combined total of about 50 times. Now, why are they on the street? Who is not supporting this? Is it the court, the probation system, the parole system?
The whole bunch, it looks like.
Right, and this is where the public has to speak up
and demand
that these things be corrected because the police are doing their job.
The public's going to speak up because this is going on too doggone long. And I think the idea of trying the police officer instead of the criminal is just for the birds.
I agree with you.
This thing here, our laws are supposed to be equal, and they're wanting equality. Let's have equality and make the laws equal to all. There's people around in some parts of the country, if they broke a window and stole something, they'd be in prison. And it should be equal all over. If it's applicable in one portion of the country, it should be applicable all over the United States.
Well,
put them in prison the same way. If it's juveniles breaking in and stealing and looting, take the juveniles to the police station, hold them till their parents come down. Let the parents be responsible for it.
I think I got the answer to it. I think that any child that's out there and's caught looting and caught damaging another person's property, I think that the parent ought to be sentenced and
right.
ought to spend its weekends in jail to pay for these. Now, all you'd have to do is take a parent and put him in prison to pay the penalty 5 Saturdays and Sundays in a row, and I know what would happen to me.
Now think about it,
my father would belt me from one side of the head to the other side of the head if he had to sit in, and I think that would correct the conditions in this
right.
country. We're too easy.
We can't have this stuff going on. It's going to wreck our country. And
Mr.
if the
McGee.
People care for the country and want to live here and enjoy the freedom and the good living they've had compared to any other country in this world, they should think about this, because it isn't going to go on, and they may as well fall in line and work towards getting someplace in the country, getting the things that they can have if they want to work for them, and not feeling that tearing the country down, stealing and looting and killing people is going to do it. It certainly won't.
I
Mr. McGee, thank you for calling, sir.
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much for calling. Thank you. This is Night Call in New York. Our national telephone number is area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. That's our national telephone number, and of course, we always welcome your comments and your conversations collect. Our local telephone number in New York is 866-5010. Tonight, your policeman, the most visible minority. We're also discussing police brutality. Our guest tonight, Mr. John Harrington, president of the National Fraternal Order of Police, calling in from New York. Speaking of New York, let's stay right here in New York. This time, Mr. Stuart Valberg is hearing Night Call over WLIB-FM.
Yes.
Good evening, sir.
I live a block away from the shooting, the multiple shooting that took place 3 weeks ago on 1054 Eastern Parkway.
Yes.
You might be familiar with it. There's been a big investigation and a lot to do about it. And I wondered if there was anything done in terms of increasing the number of police in areas like this. And if you're in favor of increasing the manpower of the police department as a means for protection, because I know that all decent people are in favor of this.
You're speaking of the multiple shooting. Now, I'm not familiar. Are you familiar with Mr. Harrington?
If this lady is talking about New York, I'm familiar with the one where they sent for a disturbance in the house, and when the policeman opened the door, there was a fellow with a shotgun and shot the two policemen. They answered the call. Now, if they had answered that call with their guns in their hands, it's been brutality. But they had to answer this call with their gun in its holster and secured. And when they knocked on this door, they were told, come on in. And when they opened the door and walked in, here's a fellow standing with a shotgun and blasted the two of them. Now, this is just what I say. We policemen are tired of being shot at like fish in a barrel. This is an example. The example that took place in Cleveland, where three of them in cold blood were murdered in the streets. Many, many cities. I know of 25 policemen that were shot, and many of them died only in the last couple of weeks, shot in the back, shot from ambush, shot such as this lady says in New York. But what is happening to them? Everybody runs to their defense to make sure that their civil rights is protected, that they get the best of lawyers, and if they can't afford lawyers, they'll be given lawyers. This is silly. Crime can only do one thing. It can increase. It'll never decrease under these conditions.
Thank you for calling. This is Night Call in New York, area code 212-749-3311. That's our national telephone number. Remember, you may call us collect. And we welcome your comments and your conversation. And if you'd like to talk direct to Mr. John Harrington, calling in from St. Louis, who is our president of the National Fraternal Order of Police. Mr. Harrington, let's go to Detroit this time. Miss Smith is hearing Night Call over WJLB.
Okay.
Miss Smith?
Yes.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Your question?
Yes, I would like to know if Mr. Harrington is a parent.
If I what?
If you are a father.
If I'm a father, yes, I'm a father. I got two daughters.
Oh, you have. That's nice. I am a mother, too. But here's what I want to say. You say that the looters should be shot.
Yes, I do.
And if they are youth, the parents should be held.
Yes, I do.
Well, suppose your kids went out and got into something. Do you think you should be responsible?
If my kids went out, I got two daughters, and they're 26 and 23 now, but if either one of these girls came home with any looted material, I would punish them myself, and I would take them down, I would turn them in and turn the material in. But a lot of parents will not do this.
True.
They figure, here's a profit, and I'll keep the profit.
But do you think that you should go to jail just because they went out? You have given them the best knowledge that you could, and they would still go out and do something wrong. Bobby Kennedy's boy went out and broke a windshield.
Well, now, I'm not talking about accidents. I'm not talking about some windshield that's broken by a kid playing ball. If my kid broke a person's windshield playing ball, I would be big enough to pay for it. And I would chastise my child for being in a position such as that to damage other people's property. I say this, that if the parents would take a more sterner action with their children and be more concerned. Do you know a lot of parents don't know where their children are right this very minute?
Well, I doubt you know where yours are.
Yes, I do know where mine is.
Well, it's hard to say because a kid can tell you one thing and they're doing another.
Well, my kids have never told me one thing. I always made it my business to see that my kids grew up right, and I always made it my business that my children were home at a decent hour, and I always made it my business to see them before they went to bed.
Yes,
and
I
feel that my children grew up to be very decent citizens. Of course, they're grown now and they're over 21. And
I want mine the same thing. They are over 21.
You must remember this. The children are your children, and how them children grow up is your responsibility.
Yes,
and it's how you bend the tree. That's how the tree's going to grow.
Yes, that's what we say. But they said God was greatest on earth, and he loved everybody. And look at the sinners that's out. Now, that is something. Now, you can't hold God responsible for what the people is doing.
Oh.
That's the same thing. I just want you to think about that.
I say to you, ma'am, that nobody is responsible for the actions of a child more than a parent. And if
well,
a parent is
going
to permit that child to destroy and to loot and to steal, that child has only one way that it's heading, and that's towards a road of destruction. And that is nobody's fault but the parent's fault.
Ms. Smith, thank you for calling.
Okay.
Thank you so much. This is Night Call in New York. We may not always agree, but the important thing about Night Call is that we do have dialogue. Area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. Remember, if you're calling outside of New York, we welcome your calls. Collect. We'll be calling, or I should say accepting a call this time from Champaign, Illinois. Mr. Doyle is hearing Night Call over WLRW. Good evening, Mr. Doyle.
Hello.
How are you, sir?
I would like to talk to him about, I was a young man in Chicago. I spent my teenage years there.
Yes.
And in the process of getting through my teenage years, I seen quite a bit of what you might call police brutality to kids. And,
well, Mr. Doyle, let me ask you this. What is police brutality?
Well, seeing kids on the corner, instead of locking them up, why, slapping them around a little bit and sending them home.
That's police brutality.
And then, of course, in my later years, I've become friendly with quite a few policemen, and I've known them and talked to them when I get a little older and asked them about, you know, well, why do you do this? And they say, well, what are you going to do? If you take them in and lock them up, the course just turn them loose because they don't have room to put them.
Well, Mr. Doyle, you say because a policeman comes around and kids are standing on the corner late and they slap them and send them home, this is police brutality?
Well, it would seem so, especially since one of the boys I know got kicked in the rump and had trouble with his back the rest of his life.
Mr. Doyle, let me tell you something. When I was a kid, we used to have trolley cars in Philadelphia, and old Officer Smith used to hide. And as we passed by, he'd hit me on the rump with his nightstick. And when I went home and my grandmother and mother seen that I was crying, you know what happened to me? I got hit again for being on a trolley car. And they thanked Mr. Smith, because if Mr. Smith hadn't have taken this action, and it certainly didn't hurt me, I grew up, and I did my duty as a citizen to this country, and it didn't hurt me one bit. I think it helped me.
This is not the question. The question is that if the courts and what have you had room to put more of the people and what have you, do you think the policemen would be more apt to pick them up instead of beating them up and what have you?
Mr. Doyle, this philosophy of building more jails and putting more people in jail, this isn't the way of life. The way of life is for the parents to make their children grow up to be respectable children and to live a life that they shouldn't have to be put in jail.
Mr. Doyle and Mr. Harrington.
Jail is not the answer.
Mr. Doyle and Mr. Harrington will have to break for station identification. Mr. Doyle, thank you so much for calling. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest John Harrington after station identification. Tomorrow night on Night Call, British socio-economist Robert Theobald on just what the little guy can do to make the necessary changes in our society right now. Theobald says the decisions made in America this year will determine the fate of the nation and probably the whole world. He says Americans must invent a new future. Theobald also says the prime problem facing the United States today is the growing powerlessness of the individual, especially the blacks, students, women, and the poor. And Theobald charges that this country is rapidly evolving into a fascist police state, and that if we are to prevent the complete destruction of freedom in America, we must creatively invent a whole new way of life for ourselves. Tomorrow night, economist Robert Theobald on What the Little Guy Can Do on Night Call. Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call. Area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to John Harrington about your policeman. Again, Del Shields.
And we return to our guest, Mr. John Harrington, calling in from St. Louis, who is the president of the National Fraternal Order of Police. Mr. Harrington, is it possible that you, as the president of the Fraternal Order of Police, and Del Shields as host of this show, if we could kind of exchange just a bit of dialogue for just a few moments and aware of the fact that as the president of your particular order, that there are certain philosophies that you must defend, and at the same time aware of the fact that you are conditioned by your own experience in being a policeman. But I, as a citizen, I wonder if we can possibly exchange some things.
Sure.
First, I recall when I was a youngster, a policeman was, to us, one of the most important people in our community. I recall a policeman who lived on my block. I lived out in Jamaica, Long Island, and every 4th of July, our policeman, his name was Mr. Deneen. I don't know where he is at this point, but he would always buy us fireworks on the 4th of July, and we would go into his yard, and he would watch over us, and we had all of the fireworks and the sparklers, and he was just a very, very fine individual. Because that was a few years ago. I don't want to tell my age over the air. But now we move up to an era, and I recall being in Philadelphia, and I recall leaving my station at that time, which was WDAS in Philadelphia, and at night I would ride home, and I would get home about 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning. And for about a three-week period, I was stopped every night by two policemen, and I was asked to stop, and they would look into my car, they would look into the glove compartment, and they'd look in the trunk of the car, and this went on, like, for 3 weeks. I didn't know what was going on. They said, well, we have to search the car. And I said, well, like, what is the problem? Well, you're suspicious. So I would open up my trunk, and they would count all of my albums and ask me why I had so many albums in the back of my car. I said, well, I was a traveling disc jockey. You know, this is what I had to do. Now, these are two incidents that have taken place in the span of one man's lifetime. And I recognize that times have changed. And I'm wondering whether or not the police department, in its application of the law, or in its attempt to defend the law, and in its attempts to uphold the law, whether or not the philosophy of the police department has changed over the years.
No, it's just the changing of times. You go back originally to the day that you say that the policeman in Jamaica, he used to bring us in the yard, he'd treat us, he would have fireworks, he would supervise these things just to give you enjoyment. These were
years ago. Times have changed. Times today, you take the traffic on the street, the number of automobiles on the street, crime runs in cycles, and a lot of people don't understand this. And in police work, having all these things brought in, all this information, all this data brought in, you can see that these crimes run in a cycle. Now, what do I mean by that? You'll find that the cycle is that many of the crimes that's being committed is being committed with the use of an automobile. Males or females use an automobile. Well, the way that you combat this thing is to make an outward drive to search automobiles and so forth. No decent citizen ought to feel angry because a policeman is out there. It shows that the policemen are out there doing their duty. I think a citizen should get mad if the policeman is doing nothing and sitting on the lot and reading the paper. Then they should get mad. Now, crime, as I say, runs in cycles. We in Philadelphia at the present time, we're at the end of the cycle, so I'm free to say it. We have policemen that stashed in the back of gas stations, and they had to sit back there with the tires and the tubes and the grease cans and all, because the cycle is that there is a wave of holdups being committed on gas stations. And we don't like to sit in the back room of a gas station with all this dirt and so forth that I described, but this is the way that you have to treat this cycle. We have men who have to stash themselves in closets in banks. Now, you can imagine standing in the closet of a bank for 4 or 5 hours. This is a terrific ordeal, but this is the only way that you can fight that cycle. And crime runs in cycles. And I think that one of the things have changed, even during the span that you're speaking about. I know when I was a kid, I was always told if I was lost or if I lost my car fare, go to a policeman. It happened to me one day in Fox Chase. You're familiar with Philadelphia. It's a way off. It was a country in them days. And I went up to a policeman, and I told him, my grandmother said you had to give me fare if I'm lost to come up to you. He gave me the fare, and I went home. This is how kids were taught in them days. Kids are taught today that if you don't eat your supper, I'll get the cop after you. So they've made the cop a boogeyman. Now, I've had women come up to me on the street and ask me to go up and scare their kids. And I thought this was terrible. I told them, go buy a false face. You want to scare your kid. And I think that this is the trend that has changed. I think the people have changed.
Is the police department or other police departments across the country being able to, are they able to attract the kind of policemen that you feel is capable today of actually upholding the law and carrying out their duties?
No, it's very hard to obtain policemen in most all police departments today, because in most all police departments today, policemen have to work two jobs to make one livelihood. And these commissions that the federal government has spent so many thousands of dollars tampering around with, they come in and they say, we recruit college men to take this job. And how are you going to get a college man to take a job for $5,000 a year when he can walk out? I'm talking about a college man now. He can walk out and get a job for $9,500. Why does he want to be a cop for five? And this commission's report about college men, you see, to be a good policeman, there's a lot more to being a good policeman than being educated. That's only one leg. The table has four legs. You have to also have common sense, and you have to have information, and you have to have guts, and you can't get guts out of a book. So you'd have one poor table. You'd have a one-legged table if you just had an education. Most of the trouble in the country today is coming from college kids. They won't take a bath, and they won't cut their hair.
Mr. Harrington, Mr. White is standing by in Cleveland, Ohio, and he's hearing Night Call over WERE. Mr. White?
Yes.
Good evening, sir. Good evening.
Good evening, sir.
How are you, sir?
Fine.
Your
Mr.
question?
Mr. Harrington, how are you?
Fine, Mr. White.
Yes. You know, you're having quite a bit of trouble in New York with the police, Police Beneficial Association and the mayor, you know?
Yes, I do.
It seems, don't you? And we're having quite a bit of trouble in Cleveland with the mayor keeping the police out of a certain riot area that was prone to riot. It wasn't a riot, but it was prone to riot, and let the citizens, about 400 or 500 citizens of the community, parade and patrol that area. And quite a bit of criticism by the police of the mayors of both cities. I noticed in New York to say We're going to enforce it as we see it, to heck with what the mayor says in New York.
Yes, I'm familiar with it.
Now, don't you think that the police are just about ripe enough for a police state, and this country is not ready for a police state? Don't you think so?
I don't think that there should be a police state in this country. All I think that's needed in this country today is to follow the rules. Now, if you're going to make a man take an oath that he is going, an oath before God, that he is going to enforce the laws, all the laws, now how can you make him take this oath to take the job and then say to him out of sight of your mouth, only enforce half of them?
Well, you see this. Now, you find in Cleveland and New York that they are criticizing the decision of the elected administrative official. Now, it's equivalent to the President of the United States, as some generals criticize the decision of the President and say the Army is going to do the way we want them to do, regardless of what the President says.
Let me say
well,
this,
now, that is the Army taking over, revolutionary, like we have in South America. And now, that is a dictatorship by the Army. Now, and it goes on to a police state. Now, the same thing, the mayor is head of the city, he's administrative elected head, and there should not be any political criticisms of the administrative elective head of a city by the law enforcement group.
Well,
He is supposed to use the police to the best efficient method he can, because he's got to think of the community and various segments of a community as well as the police.
I disagree with you, because even though these two men were elected mayors of New York and Cleveland respectively, they were not elected because they were the smartest people in police work in them cities. They did not tell the voter before they were elected, I'll make the police disobey all the rules and regulations of police work and let you commit whatever crime you want to. The people would not have elected them if they had told them that. You know who gets elected? Mayor, politicians, and that's what's wrong.
We have that type of a state in America. The United States is not a police state. Now, the police seem to me to get a psychology of a Gestapo, you know?
No, Mr.
White,
Mr.
White and Mr. Harrington, we want to thank Mr. White so much for calling,
sir. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Mr. Harrington, we have about 30 seconds.
Yes, I would like to say this, that many people are concerned about rights, but the Bill of Rights and the Constitution, it guarantees everybody in this country the right of happiness the many other rights that they have a right to enjoy. These are only written on a piece of paper. It's the policeman who enforces the law that is the life and the blood of all rights. And he will not be able to guarantee these rights to anybody if he's not permitted to do his job and if he's not supported by the people he works for.
Mr. Harrington, we want to thank you so much for being our guest tonight on Night Call.
Thank you very much.
This is Darrell Shields in New York. Good night and peace.
Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tomorrow night, same time, same station, economist Robert Theobald on what the little guy can do to fight City Hall and otherwise influence social change. Listen tomorrow night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition.